This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12 and it's your final Mystery Hour of the year, although we've already got a steward's inquiry, which is a bit odd because we haven't had any questions or answers yet. But Christine in Kingston has been in touch to challenge my suggestion that it's too late to order it in time for Christmas. She says, James, I ordered the Mystery Hour board game yesterday during your show when you mentioned it. Are you sure, Christine? I'm not sure I've ever mentioned it during the show, have I? And it arrived. I happily received it 1 hour ago. So maybe you'll get lucky, but I don't think we can issue any guarantees. What I can do is guarantee at least one laugh out loud moment before 1 o'clock today, and the certainty that you will know more by then than you do now. This has gone a bit old school, haven't we, for the last one of the year? This used to be the opening spiel for every single episode of Mystery Hour. But it's true, you will have a giggle and you will know more than you do now. May not be knowledge that you're grateful for or even knowledge that you can remember by 1:10, but new knowledge it will be. I don't think I need to tell you how it works because the phones have already gone bonkers, which has turned into the word of the day. This show is brought to you by Dizzy Rascal. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 606 0973 is the number that you need. If you've got a question that needs asking, ring in and ask it. If you know the answer to someone's question, ring in and answer it. The only thing you're not allowed to do is look stuff up, okay? I used to get quite cross with people for doing it, but if only because I mentioned so often that you're not allowed to do it. Obviously, if you're tuning in for the first time, you need me to explain why you're not allowed to Google stuff. It would be a pretty stupid radio feature if you were allowed to Google the answer, because I've got Google here. And it started life as a kind of, well, two things. It started life as a way of filling up an hour on a Thursday when elections were taking place and we're not allowed to talk about the elections. So I got quite frightened, quite rightly frightened, because the only time I've ever had an Ofcom complaint upheld was when I accidentally said something about a by-election on the day of a flipping by-election. So I was right to be frightened. But the other reason is that I belong to a generation, as Josh in Tooting reminded me, I belong to a generation that didn't have things like the internet at our fingertips when we were at school. And therefore, we really needed to know stuff. And I think as the tyranny, not the tyranny, as the victory of the internet is now absolute, I think that the pleasure and the power of knowing stuff will once again come to the fore. If you don't know stuff and you rely upon references or Google to cover up your lack of knowledge, you end up doing what Jacob Rees-Mogg did last night, which was accidentally compare himself to the vilest character in the whole of Shakespeare, because he was Googling a phrase without having any knowledge or understanding of the play that the phrase had come from. So knowledge is never going to be completely superseded by Google and reference books, and that's part of the reason why we like Mystery Hour so much. So you're not allowed to look it up. 6 minutes after 12 is the time, and here we go. Gareth is in Liverpool. Gareth, question or answer?
I've got a question, James.
Carry on, mate.
Okay, so why is it that some parts of the body will grow back, but others won't?
Well, bones don't grow back, do they? But everything else does.
Well, that's my point. So,
They're not bones. Just bones. The bones don't look at me like the bones don't grow back, do they?
Well, bones will heal, won't they? So parts of bones will grow back.
Yeah, they must. Yeah, they must do. So what doesn't then?
Well, I think if you cut a finger off, your finger won't grow back. But if you lose a nail, the nail will.
Yeah.
There are reptiles where their tails will fall off and they'll grow a new tail. And there are mammals and things that live in the sea that will grow parts of their body back. But why is it some bits of the body will grow back, but others won't?
So, yeah, don't you feel that the answer must be quite obvious? And I can't really prove that it is, because I can't think what it might be. But it feels like it should be obvious, doesn't it?
Well, I'm a bit confused between the what and why. So
yes.
I think there's an obvious answer with the what. But why would some parts grow back but not others? And why can't we change that to make other parts grow back if it's programmable or replicable?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've opened up a Pandora's box of inquiries and mysteries now, but we'll begin with the first one. Why do some parts of your body grow back? Do you know, don't laugh, but I got nipped by one of our animals the other day, and I was fascinated by the healing of it. So fascinated that I toyed with the idea of taking a couple of pictures of it every day and then doing it in fast forward. The healing of skin, at risk of going full Partridge 8 minutes after 12 on a Thursday afternoon. The healing of skin is absolutely incredible, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. And how does it know when to stop, James? That's the other thing, isn't it?
It's a very, very good point. We could have a profusion of fleshy outgrowths all over us from where we once got wounded. I think that's a beautiful question. Thank you, Gareth. There is, of course, a game available for the best contribution to the programme this week, although I do think it's unlikely you'll get it in time for Christmas. Mysteryhour.co.uk remains the best place to go to secure your Mystery Hour board games. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. Samuel is also in Liverpool. There you go. You wait for one Liverpudlian to come along, and suddenly there's two it was. Samuel, question or answer?
How's it going, mate? You okay?
I'm all good.
A question. I went to go and see the Nutcracker last night in Liverpool. And it was absolutely freezing when I was walking back to the car after the show had finished. And I was looking forward to getting in the car because I thought it was going to be warmer. But as soon as I stepped inside the car, I felt colder instantly. And my question is, why is it when you step inside the car, does it feel colder than it does, than it is outside, even though it's not?
Is it not just because you stop moving?
No idea.
Oh, so it could be that.
Well, that's the answer. That's the answer. But it makes no sense to me. You would assume
it does make sense to you because your engines. You think of yourself as an engine, Samuel, and your engine is ticking over while you're walking back, and you're probably quite. You know, you're walking like you do when you're cold. So you're moving quite briskly. Am I right? You're kind of.
Well, yeah, because it's cold.
So you're warming up. So you've warmed up a bit from the inside, and then you sit down in the car, and your engine goes down a notch and you get a bit colder. I think that's sounding better with every time I say it, actually. If I say it again, it might even be convincing.
Well,
it's got to be something to do with it, but everyone's going to recognise what you describe and someone will know the science of it. And if there's any doubt, after the first 2 hours, or certainly the last half an hour of the programme, this is a radio entertainment that respects the science. So why do you feel colder? Feel colder. It may be colder, but why do you feel colder when you get into your car of a freezing evening than you were when you were outside it? 0345 60 60 973. Thank you, Samuel. Peter's on the Isle of Man. Peter, question or answer?
Hiya, James. I've got a question.
Carry on, mate.
I wanted to phone in with this question for about a year, and I've purposely never Googled it because I wanted to sort of ask the radio.
Good God, the tension's going to kill us all.
Go on. Definitely. So in boxing, James, whenever somebody's been, if they've been knocked down and they've got back up and they're going to carry on, before the referee lets them carry on, he rubs their gloves on his shirt. And I've never understood why.
Oh, come on. Well, I don't know. I think it's really obvious, but you've been thinking about it for a year.
Yeah.
But he's drying them, isn't he?
Drying them for what?
Well, he's sweating stuff on the floor. It's a flipping boxing ring, Peter.
Really? Is it that simple?
It must be, mustn't it? Because, you know, you don't want slippy gloves, do you?
But surely they'll be sweaty for the rest of the time from him punching.
Yeah, but he can't. Yeah, but this is the one occasion where he can wipe the gloves down. I'm going to be wrong, aren't I? I'm always wrong when I sound cocky. The cockier I sound, the wronger I generally am. On Mystery Hour, not for the other 14 hours of the week. It's the opposite way around. All right, I'll put it on the board. Why does the ref wipe the gloves after the fella's got off the canvas?
Thank you.
Or indeed the woman, of course. It's a bit of a lazy, sexist presumption that all boxers are male. Thank you, Peter. A whole year. We've got to get him an answer. Whatever we do. 12:12 is the time. Bill's in Brighton. Bill, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
That song was on the other day.
That was a lovely contemplative that you just shared with us there. carry on.
Christmas song Santa Baby was on the other day, and it got me thinking, when did people start referring to their girlfriend / boyfriend as baby, specifically in songs? You go back to some of the jazz songs in the 50s, perhaps, and you get baby, but it's a bit of an odd phrase to use, but it's well used, and I just wanted to know when it started.
I really like that. The first song that contained baby as a term of endearment is what you want.
Yeah.
Because it'd be impossible to pinpoint it outside of popular culture, wouldn't it? Because it was. All right, you're on.
Okay.
Santa Baby. Well, it might be that. No. What's the earliest one you can think of then?
I can think of Louis Jordan's songs.
That's what I was going to say, the Jungle Book guy. Yeah. And did he say baby? Did he sing? Is there one in the Jungle Book that says baby in it?
What's one of the Jungle Book songs?
I'm the king of this one.
Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby?
Is You Is
that
or
was,
Is You
I think,
baby?
Late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, you're on. First song to use baby as a term of endearment. That is one of my favourite questions of the year so far, but you can't be 100% sure of how good a question is until you've got the answer. That's one of the things you learn when you've been doing Mystery Hour for a while. 12:13 is the time. Mike's in Bexley Heath. Mike, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Yeah.
Why does time fly when you're having fun? So if something really bad happens, like I had a car crash once, and time seemed to slow down, and that might be your brain's way of kind of...
You can't have both. I mean, it might be the answer is the same, but we can't have both on the...
Yeah, but my point is...
Why does time fly when you're having fun?
It's a bit masochistic, because when something good's happening, all of a sudden, my 16 brain cells in my head decide to hit the fast-forward button.
Yeah, but it's not... So, certainly in terms of self-preservation, things appearing to slow down when you're in danger would make some sense, in that it gives you more of a reaction time. It's probably some sort of adrenaline-related reaction.
Yeah, but
time flying when you're having fun is because you're not noticing. You're just so engrossed in something that the time flies by. You haven't got time to notice the time, is kind of my answer.
But if your mind's got the choice of speeding time up or slowing it down, why would it choose things like boredom?
Subconscious. It's subconscious, not conscious. Yeah. And maybe meditation, you could actually somehow achieve a state where you're speeding up the perception of the passage of time. Obviously, you're not speeding up the passage of time. I like this.
And it just seems like we're getting shortchanged.
I know you would rather speed up when everything's a bit rubbish and slow down when everything's a bit brilliant. I completely agree with you. I've had this thought myself in the past. It's just sort of like insomnia as well. You sort of think, why can't I speed it up to the bit where I fall asleep? Again, you're on. Okay, why does time fly when we're having fun? And the converse, why does it slow down? Why does it drag? Double maths, Mike. That's the bit that's missing from this conversation. The longest period of time known to man, double maths.
Quality.
Isn't it? 12:15 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
18 minutes after 12. Why do some parts of your body grow back while others don't? It's a bit like the human condition not making sense, the first question and the last question. Why does time fly when you're having fun but drag when you're really, really bored? And why do some body parts grow back and other parts don't? Life would be so much better if we could speed through the boring bits and really savour the great bits, and also grow back more body parts. Why is the car colder? When you get in the car on a freezing cold night, why does it feel colder inside than outside? Why do referees white boxing gloves on their shirts after the pugilist has got up from the canvas? And when did the word baby first appear in song as a term of endearment? That, I think, is a vintage collection of questions. Don't you think, Keith? That's absolutely... We never really have a bad week, but that is absolutely brilliant. And what was the other one? I've done that one. I said, why does time fly? But I mixed it up with the first one. So I said, look, they're both questions about the human condition and possible improvements we could make to our shared experience. 19 minutes after 12 is the time. Hannah is in Brighton. Hannah, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why are drag queens called drag queens?
I don't make that noise yet. I haven't established that sort of self-congratulatory little because I'm always slightly wary of why is X called X when the answer is just because they are. Why wouldn't they be called drag queens, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So why wouldn't they be called drag? Where does the word drag come from?
Well, all I can think of is car racing.
Yes.
The reason I ask this is on Christmas Day, I'm having dinner with a retired drag queen.
I don't know if they ever retire.
Who I'm meeting for the first time. So I'd like to have some, quirky...
Great, isn't it?
Why they're called drag queens.
He might not know.
This is it. I'm going to ask him.
That's such a... What a wonderful, thoughtful guest you are. May I ask a little bit about the context of this? Me, Tammy, it's a bit odd to meet for the first time on Christmas Day.
Yeah, well, I've moved to Brighton with
That'll
my new
do.
Partner. Yeah, yeah,
no,
absolutely.
Yes.
I moved to Brighton with my new partner, and that one of their friends is a retired drag queen, so I'm meeting for the first time on Christmas
Day. That's fantastic. So why are drag queens called drag queens? And if they don't know, then we'll have given you the mother of all icebreakers, Hannah.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a lovely Christmas. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Leroy is in Ruislip. Leroy, question or answer?
Hello, I've got an answer for you, James.
Go on, Leroy.
It's about the boxing one.
Yes.
When boxers go down, they normally use their hands to get up, their fists.
Yes.
So little bits of resin and dust and little bits that gather on the canvas of the ring have to be wiped off in case they punch the guy and one of the bits of leather hits him in the actual eyeball and goes in there. So it's just safety.
And not just the eyeball, but it could cut them much worse, couldn't it, if you've got a little bit of grit on it or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. It's not,
I was so close, Leroy, thinking they were wiped.
You were.
I was close.
I did have a little chuckle, though, when you said that.
Yeah, I thought. I suspect a few people that I wouldn't want to bump into on a dark night might have had a little giggle at my expense at that point in proceedings. What are your qualifications?
I've boxed since the age of 9. I'm 52 now, and I run a company that we coach boxing in school and mentor young kids to behave themselves.
Great idea. What's the name? Do you want to mention the company? You're more than welcome to.
Why not? It's Sweet Science. Sweetscience.co.uk.
Well, say the first word again. Go on.
I've got Sweet Science.
Sweet Science. Oh, lovely
Sweet
idea.
Science and Science in the Laboratory, yeah. I've got one for you, though. Do you know why boxing is called boxing? I'm sure you've had this on air before, but I just wondered if you knew.
No, I don't. It's not rude, is it? This is a proper answer.
No, not at all. No, a lot of people think it's because the ring is shaped like a box. It's not. It's because when you actually clench your fist, it's the shape of a box, pretty much. That's how boxing got its name.
Is that
boxing.
Right? Oh, blimey, heck. Give him a round of applause. Give him two, actually, Keith.
Come on.
That's lovely.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. And that makes the question and the answer. That was very strong, actually. You're not supposed to throw in extraneous information like that, but that might be a rule I review in the new year, because as with science, as new discoveries are made, the rules can evolve. The best available theory can improve. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Jack's in Birmingham. Jack, question or answer?
One question, please.
Yes.
And that is, when birds fly in a V formation, how does the bird at the front know it needs to be at the front?
Oh, I think haven't we done this quite recently, Keith? No? Can you remember? Oh, this isn't sounding very professional, and there's not even any light at the end of the tunnel to justify the amateurism. How does the bird at the front know to be at the front? They take it in turns, I think.
Okay.
Don't they?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
No, of course you're not. That's why
you rang
in. I
just looked up the other day and seen them flying.
It can be quite majestic. All right, no, someone will know the answer to that. Possibly someone who paid more attention than I did last time it was on the programme, Jack. But we shall have to wait and see. How does the lead goose know to be the lead goose when flying in a V? Other, I think, aquatic birds do that as well. Do ducks fly in a V? I think they do. Or do they fly in a row? 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Jackie's in Cheltenham. Jackie, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why is my 9-year-old English bulldog eating so much grass? Every time I take her in the garden, she's eating grass.
It's a bit specific.
When she's eating grass, I'll be milking her next.
You silly sausage.
It's just me insane every time I take her out, you know. She just wants to go out and eat grass and I'll take her back in again.
Yes. Is it a new development or has she always been? Because she might
she's
be a bit
poorly.
She's
always been doing it. It's just always drives me insane.
Why?
You know, especially when it's wet and...
What's the problem? It's only grass.
In the garden and she's eating grass.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
She's a lovely dog. She's asleep at the moment. She's lovely there.
I don't doubt that for a minute. I'm just thinking if there's an obvious answer to it.
And she's not sick with it. She doesn't come in and be sick with it. She's fed a good quality dog food, so... I don't know.
I had some pate yesterday, Jackie, between you and me, and I opened it. It was quite posh, and I opened the jar, and I got a waff of cat food. And I tried it anyway, what was I thinking, Jackie? Genuine, you know the smell. It's unmistakable.
Yeah, I've got a cat as well.
Yeah, I thought you might.
21-year-old cat.
Yeah, 21, blimey, that's a good innings.
Yeah. So you know
that waff that you get with the wet food, because we use dry food mostly now with ours. We've got mostly dry food, but it took me back to my childhood. I used to hate feeding the cats.
Oh, yeah.
And pate's not supposed to smell like it. It was quite pot. I can't believe I ate it now. I only had a tiny bit and I threw it in the bin.
Yeah, Yuck.
No,
my,
I know.
Just to let you know, my dog would be better at being Prime Minister as well.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt that for a minute. I mean, Churchillian, no less. I probably would have been better off eating the grass than that pate I had yesterday. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. I nearly tweeted it. Jackie, I'll do my best to get you an answer. I nearly tweeted it because it was so gross. And then I thought that just wouldn't be very fair on the company. Maybe I got a duff jar of pate. You can tell it's nearly Christmas, can't you? I'm lurching into North Norfolk digital territory like it's going out of fashion. Colin's in Chelmsford. Colin, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on, Colin.
Right, so it's the answer to your drag queen question.
Oh, yes.
Or you call it drag queen question.
Yes.
So it's actually from Shakespeare times. So when Shakespeare was writing his plays and he'd do his play notes, back then all of the female parts were played by men.
Yeah.
So in the footnotes of the script, he would write D-R-A-G, which was dressed as girl.
This is strong. I just hope this is true.
Because
it's got that ring to it that's so beautifully plausible, but it could be complete hogwash.
Yeah, I heard it from. So yeah. I'm not a drag. Unfortunately, I'm not fabulous enough to be a drag queen. But
yeah, me both.
I heard RuPaul, obviously the most famous drag queen on the planet.
Yes.
She told Helen Mirren that on the Graham Norton show last year.
Oh, great call! Great call. And why queen?
I don't know. I think queen's just queen's quite a gay term of endearment, so
yeah,
I think that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
That's what
dressed as girl is an absolutely beautiful answer.
Yeah, dressed as girl, so it's just be abbreviated inside.
And
of the
superb qualifications. You've cited RuPaul, I mean, which obviously, if it was RuPaul himself, herself, you'd be getting.
Yeah, she was discussing it with Helen Mirren.
Be a Ray Liotta now, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's 100% true.
No.
But it gets you a round of applause.
I'd definitely go with that source more than anyone else.
No, well, I would as well. So I guess what I'm thinking is it's almost too good to be true, and sometimes they are true. That's a lovely one, dressed as girl, because it's got that. Oh wow, of course, and the historical context is correct, Colin, and indeed RuPaul demonstrating a much better grasp of Shakespeare than Jacob Rees-Mogg managed last night. But there we are. God, there's a drag queen you wouldn't want to see. Sid's in Brighton. Sid, what would you like to say? Question or answer?
Question for you, James.
Carry on, Sid.
I was with my son the other day. We were watching telly, an advert came up, and there was a ball in a field, and the ball chased the man, and my son said, why? And I said,
ball with a U. B-U-double. I thought you said ball. I thought it was like a ball, as in balls.
Sorry.
No, that's right. My bad.
And I mentioned red, and he said, why? And I didn't know why. And then he actually said to me, well, when that man's on the radio again, you can ask him.
That
because
man.
I'm always listening to
man.
You.
I thought I'd like to think we were on first name terms by now, Sid. You mean Clive Bull? Hang on. I just need to get my ducks in order. What was the name of the fellow who got the drag queen question right? I just need to write that down.
Colin.
What was the last fellow called, Sid? Were you paying attention?
Colin.
Oh, well done. At least one of us is. So Colin got the answer correct. And then we're putting a new question on the board about bulls, and that is Sid. This is up there, isn't it, with kind of knowledge? They're not. It's not the redness of the thing. It's the movement that gets the bull's attention.
Oh,
I think.
Okay. Yeah, because I thought they were colourblind. Are they not?
I think they are. So it's not the red that makes the bull get angry. It's the swishing of the cape, I think, isn't it?
Okay, maybe, yeah.
So what's the question? The question is, does red make a bull angry, and if so, why?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Okay.
If you can make me look intelligent when my son comes home today,
I will.
From his hands, that would be brilliant.
I'll put it up now. Sid, we'll do our level best to get you over the line. But you may have already been right. It may just be the movement, the tempting movement of the cape. I like that question, and I hate it when I can't remember because it reminds me that it might be age related now rather than just forgetfulness. Philip is in Woking. Philip, question or answer?
Question, James. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Thank you, Philip.
Question is there a pole at the North Pole?
As in a pole in the ground.
Yeah, like, I appreciate there's more than one North Pole, but as in like the geographic North Pole, top of the world, is there like a marker of any description?
Not a Polish scientist.
I mean, potentially a Polish scientist has been there, it'd be a Ray Liotta, I feel, but
a Polish scientist at the North Pole rang in, I'm in the North Pole and I'm a Pole. Why do you want to know?
I watched the Santa Claus movie the other night.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And it had like the classic red and white barbershop Santa style,
yeah.
North Pole.
Yes.
I don't believe there's one of those, but I just wondered
There should be something there. There should be something there.
And what's
another equivalent, like the equator? You can see when you go to Greenwich, you see it, don't you? The meridian.
The meridian, yeah. And I lived in Kenya for a bit, and there's the equator's marked there. But I just wondered, at the North Pole, is there any kind of physical marker permanent?
I like it. I put it on the board, Philip. Is there a pole at the North Pole? 03456060973. Time now for the very latest news headlines with Tim Humphrey.
Everyone can make little changes to waste less. And at McDonald's, we're no different.
Like reusing our old cooking oil to make biodiesel.
That helps fuel my truck.
Or recycling my used McCafe cup at McDonald's.
To make a birthday card for me. Thanks, Dad.
It's the start of a plan to recycle and reuse even more. Because we know when you change a little, you change a lot. Search National Cup Recycling Scheme for more information on McCafe Cup Recycling at over 1,000 restaurants.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Why do some body parts... I should add, if you're tuning in for the first time at Thursday after 12, we're doing Mystery Hour. It's not like the other 14 hours of the week. Why do some body parts grow back while others don't? Why, when you get into your car on a cold night, does it feel colder inside than outside? Done the boxing gloves question. When did the word baby first appear in song as a term of endearment? Why does time fly when you're having fun? Done the drag queen's question. How does the front goose know how to fly in front of the V of the rest of the geese? Why does Jackie's dog keep eating grass? What makes bulls angry with regard to the red rag? And is there a pole at the North Pole? I think that's the lot. And you're free to answer any of them. 12:34 is the time. Is it Kira in Belfast?
It is indeed, James. Merry Christmas to you.
Well, how charming. Merry Christmas to you too. So sometimes with names like yours, that my colleagues put a phonetic help on the screen so that I know how to...
Sometimes that has been known to happen with my name, that's right.
Well, I would have been fine with the correct spelling, but the phonetic help they've put on is K-E-R-A.
Oh, goodness, no. Mine is the only way Kira should be spelled.
Yes, I know, but I would have called you Kira, because I looked at Kira. Obviously, being Irish, I'm familiar with the name and the correct pronunciation. And then I looked at the bit in brackets. I nearly called you Kira, as if you'd been named after something out of Star Wars.
Well, you didn't, so that's even better
exactly
for me.
Exactly that.
This is the first time I've called in, and you've got my name right.
Welcome.
Everything's good in the world.
Thank you, Kira. So, question or answer? Thank you, Kira. All right, let's not get carried away. Question or answer? It's an answer.
It's an answer, so it is. It's for the lady that was asking about why her dog eats grass.
Yes.
And Jackie. Really, it's because there is something in the grass that it actually settles an animal's stomach, a cat and the dog. And if they're feeling a wee bit under the weather, or feeling a bit sick, they will eat the grass, and that will be the first sign that they're not feeling well. And a lot of them will be sick if it's a little bug that's working on them, or if they've overindulged in maybe too much food or treats. And it's normally the first point of call. I was a veterinary nurse for 13 years, and it's normally the first point of call we would have asked the clients, you know, have you noticed?
So if Jackie's dog's eating grass a lot, then there might be something wrong with the dog's diet.
Might have something going on, might have a wee bit of an upset tummy, maybe the food isn't agreeing with it, it doesn't agree with it. Some dogs don't like chicken in the food or turkey in the food. So it's just something to do with the diet. It's a wee bit like us having an antacid.
No, I get it. It's a natural kind of soother?
Yes.
I don't know what the
nature's
word
means. Nature's way.
Great work. And qualifications, veterinary nurse for 13 years.
Yes, for 13 years and now a dog walker and pet sitter.
Round of applause for Kira.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you too. Thank you. I hope Jackie's not... I mean, I've taken that on board, Jackie. It is a sign of some sort of gastric unhappiness. So make of that what you will. Gareth is in Colchester. Gareth, question or answer?
It's a steward's inquiry, actually, James.
Oh, no. I know which one it's going to be as well, don't I? Too good to be true one, right?
It's the drag one.
No! Damn your eyes! Go on.
Now, unfortunately, I can't give you a precise answer.
No, there probably
isn't
one.
Because this is about etymology.
Right.
And etymology is often very, very obscure and often not known at all. But what we do know is that the word drag isn't recorded until about the 1870s.
Oh, really?
To describe a man dressed as a woman.
So it's not in the folio editions or anything like that?
Well, to start with, Shakespeare We don't have any of his original stage directions.
What if I get RuPaul on? What if RuPaul rings in to start shouting at you? That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
That would be fantastic. Yes. But unfortunately, it's that standard thing where whenever anybody asks where a word came from and someone says, oh, yes, it's actually an initialism, like the word cop for yes. policeman, COP, people will try and insist that means citizen on patrol.
Yes.
Or that the word posh comes from port out starboard home. It's always, always nonsense.
Oh. Even especially posh?
Sorry?
Even posh?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
There's absolutely no record of the word port out starboard home ever being a thing in terms of ticketing.
What you are probably describing is some sort of historical precursor to Mystery Hour, where yes. someone came up with an answer to a question that sounded incredibly plausible but was actually wrong.
It's always the absolute rule of thumb is if someone tries to tell you that a word, an old word, is some kind of initialism,
acronym.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
There must be some that are true, mustn't there?
No.
Well, you can't say it like that. There must be. Well, I never. So, what do we know about drag then? Or are you just shooting down the last answer rather than providing your own, which is fine.
I think the closest anyone can get to it is it might be kind of a reduction from the term grand rag, which was related to masquerade balls.
Okay.
That's the best we can do, I'm afraid.
What about the fact that the robe is so long that it drags along the floor? No. No. All right. Well, I guess you get a round of applause, but I'd have been tempted to leave Colin's. I mean, RuPaul was the source of that answer, but of course that doesn't mean that it's true. And
well,
poor
Do you want an answer, or do you want as close as we can get to
the answer? Do you want any? Well, this is the jeopardy upon which the whole Mystery Hour board game is built. Because the more plausible your wrong answer is, and you're allowed to make up your own wrong answer, the more likely you are to win. And this, I bet, this question gets into the next edition, gets into the supplementary question pack that's coming out next year. I'll be amazed if it doesn't, actually. But Hannah's got nothing now on Christmas Day. You've ruined her Christmas.
Oh, sorry about that.
I suppose I better give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. 12:40 is the time. Sorry, Hannah. Well done, Gareth. And sorry, Colin. I loved your answer. And sorry, Rue, if you're listening. You must come on the podcast. Joe's in Newcastle upon Tyne. Joe, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry
why
on,
do some body parts grow back and others don't?
Yes.
In very simple terms, the less sophisticated the function of a body cell, the more likelihood there is of it regenerating spontaneously. So skin, if you cut yourself, you can heal your skin, especially if you keep the two parts of the cut together. Likewise, if you break a bone, if the surgeon puts the bone back in place, the bone will regenerate in its normal shape. Flip that with your heart tissue and in particular nervous tissue in your brain and your spinal cord, you injure that and essentially that's it gone for life. Although stem cell research may lead to us being able to regenerate heart and brain tissue in the fullness of time. But that's the very basic overview about why these things happen to some bits of the body and not to others.
And why would a whole finger not grow back then?
Well, because it can if your finger's cut off and a plastic surgeon gets there quick enough, they can literally plug it back
in together. So it's the small seal, as it were, isn't it? The glue, the reconnection. Yeah. But you couldn't grow a whole finger back. You could grow just enough to reattach it, and that's the same with a broken bone.
If you amputated your finger in a machine or something, and the finger was lost.
Get it pack in ice, get it in ice, get down the doctors, get down the hospital super quick, and you could be laughing. If I told you how Keith chose to communicate to me visually the word finger a moment ago, Joe, how do you think he might have done that?
Was it one or two fingers?
It was one finger, Joe.
Okay.
And it was that one actually. It was. Yeah. It was the bit. It's unbelievable behaviour, but you get yourself a round of applause.
Thank you.
I just shouldn't be allowed to do that in the workplace anymore. It's not the 1970s, but it's done it again. 12:42 is the time. Well done, Joe. I like that. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it. So you're not really growing anything back. You're just repairing. And on the, yeah, I knew there were lots of others. There's military terms which are rather rude, as John reminds us. Snafu, FUBAR, and I don't know what the other one is, but FUBAR. So some acronyms are true, but what came first, the acronym or the phrase? I don't know. WAG, as in wives and girlfriend. That's an absolute stone cold winner, isn't it? We talk about WAGs. That is an acronym or an initialism. So it's not true that they're all nonsense. Shuggy's in Barnet. Shuggy, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
Right. Oh, by the way, how are you?
Very well, indeed.
Fully clothed, I trust, yes?
Yes, indeedy.
Yeah. Okay, it's about things growing back. The three things that you mentioned, nails, bones, and skin.
Yeah. I thought we'd just done this, but I shall listen with interest nonetheless.
Okay, they grow all the time. In fact, covering the bone is a yellow membrane called periosteum,
right.
And it's specifically designed to stop bone growth. If there's a breach in it, the bone cells will escape, osteoblasts are called, and produce bone. And the periosteum races to cover it up and stop that happening. Your nail, for instance, you know, fingernails and toenails, emanate from something called the nail bed. And this is similar to a hair follicle. So your nail's growing all the time anyway. You don't actually lose a nail. You just lose the growing part.
So this is why we think that we're regenerating, but we're really just repairing.
Exactly, and your skin is the same. Your skin's growing
that.
All the time.
That's a great. That's actually a really good example of two answers in a row, completely complementing each other.
And also, when it comes to growing back limbs, the reason you can't do that from a limb down to a digit is that the cells there are not stem cells. Stem cells are something called totipotent. In other words, they can become anything they like. But once they go down a certain route, for instance, making muscle or nerve or tendon or whatever, that's it. They can't go back and start changing into something else. If there were stem cells, when you cut a finger off, then in theory you could regrow the whole finger.
Anything. I love that. I didn't ask the last fella, but I'll ask you, what are your qualifications?
I was a chiropodist for many years and had to learn all this stuff.
Okay. All right, that'll do. Nice. Why did you stop being a chiropractor? Have I asked you this before?
No.
I just got deja vu then. I've definitely asked someone else why they gave up chiropody in the past. You sound too young to have retired.
Oh, bless you. I'm 68, mate.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
I started doing physics, got bored with it, and a friend of mine had recently qualified as a chiropodist, and I thought, well, he's sick and I can make a lot of money, so I switched and did that.
And is it quite a good living, is it, being a chiropodist?
It was at the time. I mean, I haven't done it for quite a number of years. I became an IT consultant after that.
There you go. Around all the bases. Oh, right. Anyway, round of applause for your chiropody-based knowledge. That's an, I like
thank
that a
you
lot.
Very much.
No, thank you very much. And you have a cracking Christmas as well, Shuggy. It's 12:45.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Right, it's a very tricky Mystery Hour because I say clear some of those questions off the board to make room for answers, and then boom, switchboard lights up again like a Christmas tree, and there's no guarantee that they will actually be answers. So what we need answers to at the moment is the cold car question, the baby in songs question, when did the word baby first appear in song, the time flies when you're having fun question, the geese flying in a V question, the bull question, and the North Pole question. That's all I've got left. That's a lot. We're going to have to power through. Ben's in Leon C. Ben, question or answer?
Sorry, James, I'm afraid it's another question.
That's all right. We need questions. Can't have answers without questions, Ben. That's philosophy, that is.
That's true.
Carry on.
A bit deep.
So
my question, I've just taken my little dog to the vets.
Yes.
And as I was wandering back, over the years, I've read different answers to this question, so I can really do the definitive one. Vets, as I recall, are able to treat humans when they're injured, but doctors aren't able to treat animals.
What do you mean by able?
Oh.
Well, because, I mean, they're probably not... I don't think either is encouraged or allowed, but in the way that a vet could set a broken leg for a human and a doctor could set a broken leg for a horse.
Yeah, but I think one's legal and one's illegal.
Really?
Yeah.
You think vets are legally allowed to treat humans, but doctors are not legally allowed to treat animals? Come off it, Ben.
No, I've read it.
Really?
The definitive answer. Absolutely.
Well,
and now you can ask me for the source, and don't ask me for that because this is years ago. And I was just literally walking back from the vet when it popped into my head. So.
I would ordinarily ask you for a source.
I know.
Because it sounds highly unlikely to me that dogs that vets can treat humans, but doctors can't treat dogs.
I discussed it with the kind lady that answered the phone.
Yeah, don't bring her. Don't try and get her into trouble.
You
rang in with it. She didn't force you to. She didn't hold a gun to your head, did she?
Independent verification.
Well, all right then. I'll put it on the board, but only in pencil. What? 0345 606 0973. Lydia's in Southend. Lydia, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Come on then.
So the question about when you get into a car, why does it feel cold?
Yeah.
And the reason is because the inside of cars are mostly black, and colour has a really important job in either reflecting or absorbing heat. So yeah. Black tends to really absorb heat really well. That's why we put on white T-shirts in the sun. But it also releases that heat really quickly as well. So in a car, which tend to be mostly black plastic or black leathers, and then you've got lots of glass, any heat that was in your car just escapes, basically. So,
but would that would be colder than outside, though?
Yeah, because outside you've got other factors. You'll have different colours in the environment. You'll have heat escaping out of the ground.
No, I like it. I'll take it. You know what's going to happen. Samuel's going to ring back and say, my upholstery is very, very pale beige.
Well, as I say, on the whole, they tend to be that case. So,
love it. That could be the answer. Qualifications?
I'm a research scientist. I'm a physicist.
Well, that'll do. Round of applause for Lydia, please. Beautifully done. Thank you very much. There you go. Finally, all your research coming in useful. Michael's in Manchester. Michael, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Michael.
Time flies when you're enjoying yourself.
Yes.
You had that right. It's all about subjective perception. It's as simple as that. If you're really enjoying yourself, you don't look at your watch.
And if you're not
you're
really
bored,
enjoying
you look at
yourself,
your watch all the time.
Yeah. What about? The question about why does time seem to slow down when you're in danger is actually a different question entirely, isn't it? It is
a different question. Yeah, it's about the degree to which you're focusing on a particular event.
Yeah, of course.
Because normally your brain's processing all sorts of information coming from different directions. If you're in danger, you're really focused on that one thing, aren't you?
You are? And your qualifications for the perception of time question?
I have a degree in philosophy with an interest in consciousness.
Yeah, I have a degree in philosophy as well, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, great minds. It's a round of applause, I think. Well done, Michael. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Howard is in Sydenham. Howard, question or answer?
Hi, James. Good to hear you. Answer.
Go on, Howard.
It's about the bulls. Bulls are colourblind, so they're not affected by red.
So what makes them go cross?
That wasn't the question, but where it's waving the rag around, I should think, probably annoys them a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. Qualifications?
I don't know if you're going to like this. I was preparing for a quiz last night, and I hadn't done any questions for an Archer's quiz online.
Right.
So I used this reference library I've got called James O'Brien's Mystery Hour game. And it's one of the cards.
Oh, this is a magical moment. Keith, get a special sound effect. We need something a bit different. You can't just get... Where's the Hosanna? Give him a... That is the first time it's happened. Your source is the Mystery Hour board game.
It is indeed, and I was reading it last night to prepare for a quiz. Yeah.
Well, be careful, because, you know, I mean, we had quite a high criteria of quality control, but I wouldn't want you to get sued as a direct consequence if there's cash prizes and stuff like that.
Oh, no.
No, it's all good.
No,
it's all good.
So.
Give him a round of applause as well.
Thank you.
There we go. Oh, that's what a lovely moment. Almost the end of the year together as well. 12:54 is the time. Andy's in Tunbridge. Andy, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer. Marker at the pole.
Yes.
No, there's not a physical marker at the North Pole.
Oh.
Reason being that it's sea ice and there's no landmass there. So it's just too unstable to put anything permanent in place.
Okay.
However, at the South Pole, there is a procession of markers. So they have installed markers there. But because even though that there is land at the South Pole, it's still covered by an ice sheet, and the ice sheet in itself is still moving. So they have to keep adding new markers to put there to reposition the location. But yeah, the question was about the North Pole, and there is no physical marker at the North Pole.
Qualifications?
My original bachelor's degree was in cartography and geography.
Very nicely done. Round of applause for Andy. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
I'm getting quite a lot of chatter about that question about vets and doctors not being as daft as I thought it was. This is what always happens when I think something's daft on Mystery Hour. It turns out not to be. Although I'm also getting some chatter saying that it was actually quite daft. There was a prosecution in my town a few years ago. A surgeon had let his vet friend sew his patient's hernia wound, says Anne. But would they be able to do it the other way around? Probably. And the answer, I think, would be, well, I'm not allowed to do that, am I? Jim's in Glasgow. Jim, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, Jim.
Come on, Jim.
It's about the geese.
Yes.
The goose that flies at the front is one of a pack of the stronger geese. And when it flies at the front, it breaks the wind. And they fly in a V, so that each goose, as it goes back, it's the weaker geese that are at the back, and the stronger ones within the pack take turns of moving
slipstream
back to the front. Yep.
Slipstream, like in Formula One.
Correct, I'm indoor.
Yeah, there's less resistance. Oh, what a beautiful answer. Qualifications?
I once watched a sales motivational video. I was a salesman for 30 years, and he used the geese as a kind of analogy.
Be the goose, Jim. Be the goose, Jim, is what they were saying in the motivational. Be the leading goose. We don't want any stragglers in this sales team. We only want alpha geese. That kind of thing.
Correct.
I like it. Hang on, how do they know to go to the front? How do they know it's their turn?
Because the one at the front, when it gets a bit tired, will drop back, and then the next strongest one will come to the front.
So they just do it on a kind of...
They do it on a shift basis,
A round of applause for Jim. Great answer. Sales motivational video. I don't think that's ever come up as a qualification before, but I like it. 12:57 is the time. Tony's in North Finchley. Might be the last one. Question or answer, Tony?
An answer.
Quickly.
I've been told my daughter to the vet question. The reason why vets can treat humans and doctors can't treat animals is that the doctors are not qualified to speak to animals. Animals can't speak back, so they can't actually ask them what's wrong with them. And apparently that is true. My daughter's a qualified doctor, and I've got friends that are vets, and they both verified it in their medical schools.
So vets can treat humans, but doctors can't treat animals?
Yeah, because vets can actually ask the human, why does your leg hurt or something? Yeah. And a human can answer it, whereas doctors can't, obviously animals can't speak back.
I'm going to give you a round of applause, Tony, but I've got a very quizzical look on my face. I don't mind telling you.
I know.
In fact, if I was Roger Moore, I would now have one eyebrow heading in heavenwards. But I can't do that, so I'll give him a round of applause. Well played.
Thank you. And have a nice Christmas.
And you, Tony. Ho, ho, ho. Or O-O-O, as I should say, given my year on Twitter. I think we're out of time. Can you do it in 10 seconds? William in Warwick.
I'll give it a quick go. It's a difference between being in a car and being outside.
Yes.
It's due to conduction versus convection. So when you're touching something and conducting, you actually transfer more heat to it quickly.
So the coldness is coming from the car. So she wasn't wrong, but you've added to it, and you get a round of applause as well.
Thank you very much.
And that is it, because I need to allow myself a couple of seconds to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a desperately Happy New Year. Do you know when I'm back? Does anyone know when I'm back? January the... What? 4th, is it? 5th? Anyway, I'm back in January. I've had an amazing year. I get some lovely messages off you saying things like you've helped me stay sane this year or thank you for keeping me company. But the feeling is completely mutual. So thank you for keeping me company this year, and I hope you have a splendid break. I think the winner's probably going to be Leroy on the boxing question. Sheila Fogarty.
Never so sorry. This is very bad timing, isn't it? Coughing like this.
I think the winner will be Leroy because he is a former boxer. And therefore, I just want to be sure that we're cool if we ever bump into each other. So I think this week's Mystery Hour game goes to Leroy. In the meantime, ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Here's Sheila.
Thanks very much, James. You too.